I think about Lily. Miss her. Hate that I am here without her. She would have loved this place. This room. This bed. This comfort. This warmth. She never knew anything like this. Never knew, never got the chance, never had a chance. I wish she were here. Would give whatever, everything, for 5 minutes. One smile, one laugh, one kiss. Just one. Alone. I clutch myself. Sleep. Knock. I open my eyes. Another knock. I sit up, get out of my bed, walk toward the door, another knock. I open the door. Leonard and Snapper are standing in the hall. Both of them are wearing thick white bathrobes. Leonard is holding a small box. He speaks. Time for the pool. He hands me the box, steps past me. Snapper follows him. Go put that on. We'll wait for you. They walk into the room. I walk into the bathroom. I close the door, open the box. I take out a small bathing suit. It is a bikini bathing suit, small and thin with black and white stripes. I open the door, walk into the room. Leonard and Snapper are looking out the window, have their backs to me. Leonard? They turn around. I hold up the suit. What the fuck is this? Leonard smiles. Your bathing suit. I'm not wearing this. Why not? You've got to be fucking kidding me. What's wrong with it? It's a fucking bikini bottom, Leonard. He laughs. No, it's not. It's a Speedo. It's a fine swimsuit. What are you wearing? He smiles, opens his robe. He's wearing the same suit. What's Snapper wearing? Snapper opens his robe. He's wearing the same suit. I laugh, shake my head. No way, Leonard. I'm not wearing it. Competitive swimmers wear them. I'm not a competitive swimmer. Europeans wear them. I'm not European. Motherfuckers with style wear them. I'm not a motherfucker with style. He looks at Snapper. He doesn't want to wear it, Snap. I heard him. What do you think about that? He ain't a swimmer, and he ain't European, and he ain't got no style. Why should he wear it? Leonard turns to me. Let's go. And bring your robe. Where are we going? Snap and me are going to the pool. You're going to the gift shop to find another suit. Then you're meeting us at the pool. Okay. Leonard and Snapper walk past me and out of the room. I grab my robe and follow them. We ride the elevator down and Leonard and Snap get out before me and I go further down and I go to the gift shop and I return the striped Speedo and I find a nice, large, normal American bathing suit. I try it on. It's 2 or 3 sizes too big. I have to tie it tightly, tie it to keep it from falling down. It's just my size. Just the way I like it. I walk to the counter and a woman behind the counter asks for my room key and she charges the bathing suit to my room. I go to the elevator, the pool. There are gray marble floors, simple white walls. There are simple wooden lounge chairs along a wall and there's a jacuzzi built into the floor at the far end. It is warm and the crisp, clean smell of chlorine is strong. Leonard is swimming laps in the pool and Snapper is sitting in the jacuzzi. I walk toward the jacuzzi. Snapper looks up, speaks. Nice suit. Thanks. Fits nice. I laugh, look toward Leonard. What's he doing? Swimming back and forth. Why is he doing that? He's been exercising like fucking crazy ever since he got out of that drug place. Fuck that. That's what I say. I go with him, but I don't do it. Leonard stops at our end of the pool. Nice suit. Thanks. You coming in? No. You're skinny, but you're in bad shape. You should exercise. No thanks. I'm going to do some more laps.
Go ahead.
Leonard turns and starts swimming back and forth, back and forth. I get into the jacuzzi. It's hot. I close my eyes and lean back and let the heat soak in. It feels good. Relaxes me. Calms me. When Leonard finishes his laps, he gets into the jacuzzi, and me and him and Snapper sit and relax. It feels good. When we've had enough, we get out and we put on our robes, white and thick, and we go to the restaurant. People stare at us. Most of them are well-dressed. Some of the men are wearing suits and ties. We are the only ones in robes and bathing suits. We order a huge lunch, cheeseburgers and fries and ice cream, and we eat, and when we're finished, we go back to our rooms. Leonard and Snapper say they have some business, they will meet me later. I take a nap. I dream about drinking and drugs. I get fucked up in the dream, fucking blitzed in the dream. I can't walk or talk, can't function in any way. When I wake, I feel awful, as if the dream was reality. I lie in bed. The last 10 days have been a lifetime. I feel awful. I get up, take a shower, watch TV, wait. I eat some chips and drink a cola, and the chips are tasty and the cola is cold. Leonard comes back, tells me to call all of my friends. We're going out for dinner. He wants all of them to come. I ask him where we're going, and he gives me the name of a famous steakhouse. Says we're eating at 8 o'clock. He says, get on the fucking horn, my son. Call your fucking friends. We're gonna have some fun. I laugh, and he leaves. I pick up the phone, start making calls. I ask my friends to dinner. They can all come. Kevin says our friend Danny is in town. I say, bring him along. I put on my boots, walk to Leonard's room, knock on the door. He answers. He is wearing a black suit. It looks expensive. I laugh, look at my clothes. Worn khakis, a black wool sweater, scuffed black combat boots. I look back at Leonard. They gonna let me in like this?
Ha!
I laugh.
What's that mean?
That means ha!
Yeah, what's ha mean?
Ha! Means of course they're gonna let you in. You're with me.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm fucking sure.
He steps out of the room, closes the door, starts walking toward the elevator.
Where's Snap?
He stops, turns around.
Snap's not coming.
Why?
He's just not.
Understood.
I start walking toward the elevator. I know that there are things with Leonard that I should not question. He pushes the button and the elevator arrives, and we go down, walk through the lobby, leave the hotel, go outside. It's dark. It's cold. The wind. We start walking. 5 minutes later, we're at the steakhouse. We walk through a set of large, unmarked oak doors. It's dark. The walls are wood, the carpet thick. It smells strongly of steak and cigars. I take a deep breath. We walk through a short hall to a reception stand. There's a man in a tuxedo behind the stand. He steps around and greets Leonard, calls him sir, and shakes his hand. Leonard introduces the man to me, and we shake hands, and the man says, pleasure to meet you, sir, which makes me laugh. We are early, so the man leads us through the dining room to the bar. The dining room is large and open. Candles on every table, white linens and silver, patrons in suit and tie, skirt and stocking. The bar is in a separate, smaller room. It is large and oak, runs the length of a wall. There are stools in front of it. There are small tables and low cushioned chairs spread through the rest of the room. Leonard shakes the man's hand and says, thank you. The man bows and says, my pleasure, sir. We sit down at a table. The man leaves. Leonard reaches into the inside pocket of his suit coat and removes 2 cigars. He offers one to me.
Cigar?
No thanks.
They're Cuban.
I don't like cigars. I reach into my pocket, take out my cigarettes. Leonard stares at me.
How can you not like cigars?
Just don't.
Why?
Just don't.
Do you know how to smoke one properly?
No.
That's why you don't like them. You've never learned to enjoy them.
He hands me one of the cigars.
Time for you to go to cigar school, my son. Time for you to learn one of life's great pleasures.
I take the cigar, look at it. I don't want it, but know Leonard wants to teach me how to smoke it. He shows me how to cut it. Find the tapered end, called the cap. Cut, leaving at least an eighth of an inch of the cap remaining. He shows me how to light it. Use a match. Wait for the sulfur to burn away. Do not touch fire to cigar. Bring it close. Use the heat. He shows me how to smoke it. Do not inhale. Draw in with your cheeks. Hold it. Enjoy the taste. Exhale. I accidentally inhale a few times, and the smoke is strong and burning, and it makes me cough. I don't like the taste. It is of smoke and dirt and sweat. Leonard tells me it's supposed to be a rich, creamy taste with a medium body. I have no idea what he's talking about. As my friends show up, they're led to our table in the bar. Leonard greets them all the same way. He stands and he says hello. Hello, my name is Leonard. It is wonderful to meet you. He shakes hands with Kevin and Danny and gives them cigars. He bows to the women and pulls out their chairs. Everyone is surprised by Leonard. I did not tell them much about him, just that he was my friend from rehab. I don't think they were expecting a cheery, friendly, ridiculous man in his 50s who says things like, "Drink it up. Boy, drink that cocktail the fuck up." Or, "My oh my dear lady, your perfume is so delicious I feel like I'm going to faint." When everyone has arrived, Leonard stands and says, "It's time to eat like pigs, my friends. Time for a fucking feast." We stand as a group and walk into the dining room and sit at a table in the center of the restaurant. There are immediately three waiters setting bottles of wine and water on the table. One of them sets a large crystal decanter filled with cola next to me. When they leave, Leonard stands again and raises his glass.
"It is always a pleasure to meet strong young men and beautiful young women. I am honored by your presence at my table, honored that you have chosen to spend the evening with me. Let us all raise a toast to fine food, strong drink, delicious dessert, and new friends."
Glasses are raised and the toast is made. Hear, 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 hear. As soon as the glasses are back on the table, food starts arriving. There are jumbo shrimp cocktails, small bowls with lumps of crab meat, scallops wrapped in bacon, oysters, clams, and mussels. There are salads, Cobb and Caesar and iceberg drenched in Roquefort. There are bowls of lobster bisque and French onion soup. There is food everywhere. Hands reaching for food everywhere. Smiles and laughs around the table. Other patrons are staring at our table. We don't care. The appetizers are taken away. We're given a moment or two of rest. I hear two of the girls talking to Leonard. They ask him where he lives. He says Las Vegas for part of the year, Southern California for part of the year. They ask him what he does. He says, "I'm a businessman." They ask him what type. He says the type that doesn't like to talk about work away from the office. He asks them what they do. They both work at a clothing store. He says he loves clothing. Has closets full of clothing, buys clothing everywhere he goes, loves, loves, loves clothes. They laugh. He stands and asks them what they think of his suit. He turns in a circle to give them a complete view. They tell him they think it's beautiful, and he thanks them and he compliments them on their fine taste. More food arrives. Family-style platters of steak, lamb, chicken and lobster. Bowls of creamed spinach, sautéed mushrooms, asparagus. Plates of baked potatoes, mashed potatoes, and hash browns. We eat, laugh. Leonard and I drink water and cola. My friends, now Leonard's friends, drink wine and cocktails. If a platter, bowl, or plate is ever empty, it is immediately replaced. When everyone is finished, dessert is delivered. Ice cream and pie, chocolate cake and fruit. Leonard lights a cigar. The restaurant is now empty, but for us. He motions for the concierge to bring more cigars. The man brings a small humidor to the table. It contains cigars of different sizes and shapes, cigars from different countries. Leonard walks around with the humidor and selects a cigar for each individual. When he's finished, he walks them through the same steps he taught me earlier. They listen to Leonard, follow his instructions, start tentatively. They are not tentative for long. As we smoke, Leonard stands, motions for me to stand with him. We walk into the kitchen. He takes out a large roll of cash from his pocket and starts handing out tips to everyone, to the chef, to the sous chef, to the pastry chef, to the busboys, to the dishwashers. We leave the kitchen, go to the bar. Each of the bartenders receives a handshake filled with money. We walk to the reception desk. Leonard thanks the man, slides him cash, tells him that I am his son, and that if I ever show up here, he expects that I will be treated accordingly. The man thanks Leonard and says, "Of course, sir. Of course." We walk back to the table. The cigars are out, the glass is empty, the dishes are being cleared. Leonard helps the women put on their coats. He tells each of them it was an honor meeting you. He kisses each of their hands. We walk out of the restaurant and there are cars waiting for us. My friends all thank Leonard, tell him how amazing the meal was, tell him they hope to see him again soon. He is gracious to them, says it was my pleasure. You are wonderful young people, it was my pleasure. He opens car doors, pays drivers, sends the cars away. The windows in the cars come down and everyone waves goodbye to him. When the cars are out of sight, it is me and my friend Leonard. He speaks.
Thought we'd walk back. It'll help settle the food a bit.
Sounds good. We start walking. It is colder, darker. The wind stronger.
You have nice friends, my son.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
Very polite. Very interesting. The girls were all beautiful.
I'll tell them you said so.
You have fun.
It was the best night I've had in years. Thank you for doing it.
We'll do it again next time I'm in town.
We turn a corner. The hotel is in sight. I see Leonard's white Mercedes sitting in the front of the hotel. Snap is in the driver's seat. The engine is running. I speak. Why's the car out there?
I need to go out for a while.
A little late, isn't it?
Sometimes I need it to be late.
I don't respond. We walk to the car. I nod at Snapper. He nods at me. I turn to Leonard. Thanks again, Leonard.
No problem.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll come to your room when I wake up.
Cool.
You've got your key?
Yeah.
Good night, my son.
Thank you, Leonard. Leonard turns, opens the car door, gets inside, closes the door. The car pulls away. I watch it go. Thank you, Leonard. Thank you, Leonard. Thank you. For the next 2 days, we eat, sit around the pool, watch TV, sleep. I am rarely alone. When I am alone and I'm not sleeping, I cry. I lie face down on the bed and I cry. I stand in the shower and I cry. I stare out of the window and I cry. It doesn't matter what I'm doing or not doing. The littlest thing sets me off. Everything sets me off. I cry when I'm alone. Whenever I'm alone. My bottle is always with me. An antidote to pain should I choose to use it. I keep it in plain view, on one of the nightstands next to the bed. I cradle it when I sleep. I have opened it twice, smelled, let it taunt me, let it enrage me. I do it because the test of it, the test of resisting it, makes me feel strong. Most of the time I feel like I want to die. The feeling of strength keeps me going. On the morning of our fourth day in the hotel, Leonard shows up late for breakfast. When he arrives, he's wearing a suit.
My son.
What's up? He sits.
Me and Snap are leaving in a little while.
Back to Nevada?
New York, then Nevada.
Why New York?
You remember the story I told you about my father? How he worked as a golf course maintenance man at a ritzy country club in Connecticut, just outside of New York? How he told me on his deathbed he wanted me to be successful enough to play that course someday, play it just like one of the members? Yeah, I remember. The older I get, the more anxious I am to do it. I got a line on somebody who might be able to help. I'm going to see him.
Good luck.
You gonna be okay without me?
Yeah.
You sure?
I'm a big boy, Leonard.
You need anything, you call me.
I will, thank you.
You get close to picking up that bottle, you call me.
I will.
You know she'd want you clean.
I don't want to talk about it, Leonard.
She would.
I look away. He stands.
I gotta go.
Okay. I stand.
Don't be mad at me, kid. I'm just trying to help.
You are helping. It's just hard right now. He nods. We hug each other, separate.
See you soon.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you for everything. He turns, leaves. I sit down, eat a huge breakfast, go back to the room, cry, take a nap, cry, leave. I stop at Kevin's apartment. There are two messages for me. One from a bar, one from a gas station. I would rather work at the gas station. I call the gas station. The manager tells me to stop by so that I can meet him. I leave Kevin's, walk over, meet the manager. He's young, slightly older than I am. His hair is short, shoes shined, uniform clean and pressed. He asks me if I know anything about car repair, and I tell him no. He asks me if I'm interested in a long-term position or short-term position. I tell him I need a job. Have no idea how long or short-term. He nods, thanks me for coming, shakes my hand. I leave. I call the bar. They give me an address, tell me to show up at 4 a.m. the next morning if I'm interested in the job. I go home, sit on the floor, close my eyes, try to be still. It's harder than it was in jail. Harder because the same thoughts run through my head whenever I try to do it. I think about Lily, about the last minutes of her life. I think about what was going through her head the moment she decided to die, as she tied the knots of her noose, as she put the noose around her neck, as she hung and started to fade. I wonder if there were regrets, if there was peace. I wonder if she thought about me as she hung. I try to avoid the images, change the course of my thought, empty my mind of all thought. It doesn't work. I do not possess the necessary discipline. I sit. I think about Lily and her death. I hurt. My body hurts. Everything hurts. After an hour, I stand, shake, smoke a cigarette, leave. I go to Kevin's. We meet our friends at a bar. We shoot pool. They drink. I watch them. There is temptation every second of every minute of every 5, 10, 20, 30 minutes, every single second. Temptation to drink, to annihilate myself, to make the pain go away, to hurt myself more than I already hurt. It ebbs and flows, this temptation, sometimes easy to resist, sometimes difficult, sometimes so overwhelming that I know if I move, I'm done. The only way to deal with it is to not move, to sit and wait. To hold on until it goes away. My friends get drunk. I sit with them. They all have jobs, so we leave the bar. They need a few hours sleep before they go to work. I have 3 hours to burn. I keep walking up and down cold, empty, black streets, block after block, block after block. Occasionally I see another person, usually drunk, stumbling along the sidewalk. Occasionally I pass an open bar or convenience store. The only vehicles out are either cabs or cops. I can't afford a ride with either of them. As I walk, I start to shake. My clothes are worn and thin. I don't have a hat or gloves. The cold settles over me in layers, on my coat and pants, on my skin, beneath my skin, in my bones, in my jaw and teeth. I keep walking, hoping the longer I walk, the warmer I'll become, but my theory is wrong.
The cold hurts me and shakes me, makes me numb. The more numb, the better. The more numb, the more comfortable. The numbness functions for me the same way the alcohol and drugs functioned for me. I am overwhelmed. Everything hurts. It hurts so much that I stop feeling. Everything is wiped away and the numb remains. I can deal with the numb. It is as it was before, and it is the best I can do for myself. I walk and I walk and I walk. I show up at the bar 15 minutes early. Two doormen stand at the entrance. They're both in black. They both look cold. They're both scowling. They stop me as I start to walk in. One of them tells me they're closed. I tell them I'm here for the job. One of them laughs. The other says, "Go around back. Wait at the service door." To get to the back, I have to walk around the block. There are two other men waiting, one white, one black, both young. Neither looks happy. The black man paces, swears, hops up and down to try to stay warm. The white man stares at his feet, doesn't move, doesn't speak. At 4:15, the door opens. The doormen from the front lead us into a huge, open room. Along one wall of the room, there are leveled risers with tables. The highest group of tables is surrounded by a red velvet rope. Along another wall, there is a stage. Above and at the edges of the stage are racks of lights and stacks of speakers, and at the back of the stage, there's a DJ booth. Along a third wall is a long, black bar. There are no stools in front of it. A group of bartenders and waitresses stand at one end of the bar, talking, drinking, smoking, laughing. A group of men with garbage bags are picking up trash. We walk behind the bar, open a door at one end, walk into a bright hall. There are 5 doors in the hall, one labeled men, one labeled women, one labeled office, 2 with nothing. One of the doormen tells us to wait, knocks on the office door. The doormen leave. We wait for a few minutes. We stand and stare at the floor, occasionally look at each other. The door opens. A middle-aged man steps out. He's short and fat, has dark, thinning hair, bad skin. He's wearing a black and yellow sweatsuit, black leather loafers. He looks us up and down. "Here for the job?" White man nods. Black man and I say, "Yeah." "Any of you ever been janitors and done any cleanup work?" White man nods. Black man and I say, "No." "I need people to clean up my places. There's this one and 2 others. You pick up trash, mop the floors, wipe down tables, shit like that. Hours are from 4 to 8 every morning. Pay is $7 an hour. If you do well, you might become a doorman or a barback. If you're no good, I'll fire you. If you're interested, get out there and start working. We'll process you when you're done." I turn, walk back to the room, ask one of the men with garbage bags what to do. He tells me to do what he's doing. I get a bag, pick up trash, take it to a dumpster. I get a broom, sweep the floor, get a mop, mop the floor, get a bottle of cleaner, wipe down tables, chairs, countertops. The white man and the black man have also joined the crew. There are 7 of us. It takes an hour to clean the club. When we're done, we walk down the street to another one. It's larger, flashier. There are cages hanging from the ceiling, 4 bars, 2 separate sections with tables, 3 separate levels. Process is the same. Pick up trash, sweep, mop, wipe. Takes 2 hours. When we're done, we walk to a nearby bar. Bar is in the basement of a large residential building. Has pinball machine, pool table, 2 televisions which hang in corners, free popcorn, free food every night from 7 to 10. Takes 30 minutes to clean. When we're done, most of the men leave. The white man, black man, and I walk back to the office, fill out some paperwork, are assigned days. I get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. From 4 to finish. $7 an hour. I leave, walk until I'm numb. I stop to talk to Lily. Tell her I miss her. Tell her I love her. I leave, walk until I'm numb, go home, sleep. My life becomes routine. I work. sleep is still difficult. I sleep for 3 or 4 hours a day, usually sometime in the afternoon. I walk in the cold, keep myself numb. I cry less. I go out with my friends every night, go to bars, shoot pool, smoke cigarettes, watch them drink. Sometimes I talk, sometimes I laugh. Both feel good. When I'm thirsty, I order a caffeinated cola drink, with ice and without a lemon. I start to feel more comfortable around people. The temptation is still there, always there. The urge to drink, drug, and destroy never leaves. But I'm getting used to it. It's like a rash. A nasty fucking rash. Constant, annoying, and painful. I'd like to scratch it till kingdom fucking come. But if I do, I die, and I don't want to die. When my friends go home, I walk again. Walk in the cold. Keep myself numb. Always numb. I work. Sometimes I read the Tao. Sometimes I sit, stare at the wall. The wall is white. Sometimes I feel too much, feel like I'm going to explode. All of me, all of what is inside me, anger, sadness, confusion, pain, insecurity, fear, loneliness, heart, soul, consciousness. Whatever words for some of what is inside me, there are no words to describe. It swirls, it races, it taunts, it moves to the surface and pushes, all of it pushes. I feel like I'm going to explode. I scream, at the top of my lungs, long and hard. Scream so that my lungs hurt, my throat hurts, my face hurts. I scream into pillows. I walk to the lake, scream at the water. Stand in a park and scream into a tree. Doesn't matter where I am, I just need to fucking scream. It makes me feel better. My life is a simple routine. Boss calls me into his office. I sit across from him, he speaks. I need a doorman. Nobody else wants to do it. You interested? Why won't anyone do it? It's the late shift, 9 to 4. You gotta stand outside the whole time. The bar is on Chicago Avenue, which is really fucking cold and windy, and you're gonna freeze your ass off. I need you Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday nights. Those are the slow nights. The bartender and waitresses are supposed to give you 10% of their tips, but they don't make shit those nights, so you probably won't get shit. I'll give you a 25-cent raise, but it probably won't make up for it. Sounds great. I don't got time for fucking jokes. I'm not joking. I'll do it. He looks at me for a moment. You start Sunday. Get there at 8, ask for Ted. He's the bartender, he'll tell you what to do. I have a question. What? Is this a promotion? What kind of a question is that? I've never gotten a promotion before. I'm wondering if I could consider this one. Consider it whatever the fuck you want. Just show up at 8. Thank you. I stand, leave, start walking home. I smile for most of the walk. Occasionally skip a few steps. Occasionally snap my fingers. I have been fired from every job I've had in my life. There was usually yelling and screaming involved in my firings. Always bad feelings on my employer's side. Not one would give me a positive reference. Boss told me to consider my change of position whatever the fuck I want. I'm going to consider it a promotion. The first one of my life. I might not feel like it most of the time. I may be carrying around unbearable urges to drink and do drugs. I may be depressed and sometimes suicidal. I may be feeling a sense of sorrow and loss greater and more profound than any other I've felt in a life filled with sorrow and loss. But I'm getting better. I got a motherfucking promotion. God damn it. It's time to celebrate. I take a long, nonsensical route home. I weave through the wealthy neighborhoods of the north side of Chicago. I walk past fancy stores. Past clothing stores, furniture stores. I could give a fuck about clothes or furniture. Past bookstores and art galleries. I walk through them, looking at beautiful things I can't afford. I look at the windows of real estate offices. They have listings hanging in silver frames, graystone, brownstone, turn-of-the-century row house, an excellent value. It's gonna go fast. I walk up and down the aisles of a gourmet grocery. I look at fruit and vegetables, crisp and nearly ripe, smells like a summer garden under fluorescent lights. I go to the cheese department, cheddar, Swiss, mozzarella, provolone, gruyere, blue, brie, feta, cow milk, goat milk, semi-soft, extra creamy, crumbly, mild, stinky. I look at fish, pasta, tea that costs $40 an ounce, fish, eggs that cost $200, beef raised on beer at $320 a pound. They have 12 types of whipped cream, 40 types of coffee, 50 different brands of chocolate, flowers that cost more than I make in a week. The colors, the smells, they make me delirious, make me want to eat until I explode, make me salivate, drool, my head spins, my sight blurs. I walk to the bakery section. I look at pastries and cakes, tarts and pies. My body craves sugar, always craves sugar. Years of alcoholism and the high level of sugar and alcohol created the craving, which I feed with candy and soda. I check my pocket. I have $22 on me. I have 20 or so more dollars in my apartment. The cakes have the most sugar. Sugar in the cake itself and sugar in the frosting. They come in two sizes, large and small. They come in four types, chocolate with chocolate frosting, chocolate with white frosting, white cake with chocolate frosting, white cake with white frosting. I would like to buy one of each type in both the large and small sizes. I would have them put in nice white cake boxes and have the boxes closed with finely tied and looped string. It would be a struggle carrying so many boxes home, but I would persevere. At home, I would open the boxes one at a time and work my way through all eight cakes systematically, starting with the small ones and finishing with the large ones. I would forego fork and knife and eat with my hands, licking my fingers and my lips along the way. Once I was done, I would most likely either vomit due to excess, which I have done many times in my life, or spend several hours in some sort of sugar-induced mania, maybe pacing in circles, maybe walking endlessly around my block, maybe babbling idiotically at random strangers on the street. Eventually I would shut down and sleep, happy and full, every cell of my body saturated with sugar, cake, and frosting. A woman in a white baker's outfit steps to the counter opposite me. "May I help you? How much are the cakes?" "Which ones?" I point to the cakes. "The birthday cakes. The small ones are $14, the large ones are $21. Large, please. White cake with white frosting. Do you want me to put an inscription on it? Does it cost extra?" "Nope." "Yeah, I would like an inscription." "What would you like it to say?" I think for a moment. "How about Big Promotion Jimbo?" She laughs. "Who's Jimbo?" "Me." "What kind of promotion?" "I work at a bar downtown. Got promoted from cleaning crew to doorman." "Congratulations. In a couple of years, I'm going to be president of the United States." She laughs, opens the cabinet, reaches for my cake. "I'll be right back, Mr. President. I will be anxiously awaiting your return." She laughs again, turns around, puts the cake in a box, and ties the box with a finely tied loop, hands it to me. I thank her and I go to the checkout line and I pay for my cake, my beautiful cake. I walk home. No more skipping and no more finger snapping. I don't want to hurt my cake. I do, however, smile, and I also greet people on the sidewalks with heartfelt and sincere hellos. "How are yous? It's a beautiful days." As I walk into the building, I see Mickey, the building superintendent, walking out of it. His eyes are swollen, and it looks like he's been crying. "Yo, Mickey, want a piece of cake?" "What?" "I just bought a cake. You want a piece?" "What kind is it?" "White on white." "I need some cigarettes." "If you want cake, I'll be in my apartment." Mickey skulks away. I go to my apartment. I open the door, go to my little kitchen, set the cake on the counter. I open it. My, oh my, it is a beautiful cake. I get two plastic plates and a knife. I cut two pieces away and set them on the plates. I take the rest of the cake and I sit on the floor next to my bed. I carefully pick it up and take a big bite out of it. I chew my bite slowly, savoring the light, moist, airy cake and the sweet, thick, creamy frosting. I take another bite, and another. It's a great cake. More than suitable for my promotion celebration. About halfway through my eating of the cake, there is a knock at my door. I stand, walk over, open it. Mickey is standing at the door, a pack of cigarettes in his hand. He speaks. "You have cake and frosting on your face." I smile. "Is there any left? I saved some for you." He steps inside my apartment. I walk to the kitchen, get one of the plates with cake on it, get a plastic fork, give them to him. We sit on the floor, and as we eat, he tells me about his day. He is miserable. His boyfriend broke up with him at breakfast, told him he needed someone with more ambition than Mickey, someone who wanted more out of life than a job as building superintendent. Mickey told him it was temporary, that he was working to make it as a painter, that he felt his dreams were going to come true. The boyfriend said, "I need more than your dreams, Mickey," and he walked out. Mickey starts to cry. I eat my cake. I make sure to get some extra frosting on my face. When Mickey looks up, he sees me and he laughs. I speak. "If you don't eat yours..." He laughs, starts eating. As we eat, we talk. He asks me where I'm from. I tell him Cleveland. He asks me why I moved here. I say I moved for a girl. He asks if we're still together. I say, "Yes, we're still together." I ask him the same things. He's from a small town in Indiana and moved here so he could be himself, could live as a gay man without being harassed, could try to make it as a painter. I ask him what he paints. He says he'd rather show me than tell me. He finishes his cake and he stands and he leaves my apartment. I keep eating. I'm almost done. 5 minutes later, Mickey comes back with a painting and sets it carefully on the floor in front of me. It is a small painting, maybe 6 inches by 6 inches. The canvas is black at the edges. The rest of it is covered with tiny faces. Some are smiling, some are laughing, some are screaming, some are crying. The faces are painted in perfect miniature detail. They look like little photographs. And it's a beautiful painting. Beautiful and horrifying. Full of joy and misery, laughter and sorrow. Mickey speaks. "What do you think?" "It's great." "You want it?" "Absolutely. It's yours." "Thank you." "If you need a nail to hang it, I've got them. Once I decide where to put it." "I'm gonna go. Thanks for the cake." "Thanks for the painting." "Sure. And forget about the boyfriend, that shallow fucker." He laughs. "Yeah." He leaves. I finish my cake. When I'm done, I lick my lips and fingers and clean the excess from my chin and cheeks. I want to see Lily. I usually walk to see her, but I'm tired, so I decide to take the train. I've never used the elevated train system of Chicago. I have been told it is simple and easy. I'm wary of it. Most of the time, someone says something is simple and easy, it turns out to be complicated and difficult. I put on my warm clothes. I get my last $20 from beneath my mattress, which is where I keep my money. I wrap the last piece of cake, carefully wrap it. I leave, walk to the nearest train station. I look at the map, colored lines weaving through and across each other. I find the station on the map, find Lily's station on the map, buy a token, step to the platform, wait. The train comes. I make the transfer, arrive at Lily's station. The trip is simple and easy. I now know how to use the elevated train. So much for my bullshit theory. I walk, stop at the flower shop, spend $18 on red roses. I give her the roses. I give her the last piece of cake. I tell her about my day. The best day I've had on my own in Chicago. I got a promotion. I went for a nice long walk. I spent my hard-earned money on something beautiful. I ate that beautiful thing and it was tasty. I made a friend. I was given a gift. I learned something. It was a great, great day. I tell Lily I love her, miss her. I spend my last dollar on a token home. Part of me expects Lily to be waiting for me. I would give everything for her to be waiting for me. She's not. I'm alone. I lie down, can't sleep. I wait for the darkness. I start my new job. The bar is small, nondescript, in the lower level of a large building beneath a clothing store. 8 steps lead from the street to the 10 tables, 2 pinball machines, televisions in 2 corners, continuously playing sports. There's a popcorn machine near the door. The popcorn is free. There are 3 employees working at any given time, a bartender, waitress, doorman. Bartender Ted and waitress Amy always work the same shift as me. They are boyfriend-girlfriend, and in between serving the dozen or so customers usually in the place, they stand at the corner of the bar smoking cigarettes, giggling, whispering, and kissing. I stand outside. It's cold as hell and I'm always numb. I always have a roll of drink tickets in my pocket. I'm supposed to offer them to anyone and everyone who walks by the bar. They are redeemable for either a free shot of watermelon liqueur or a free kamikaze. No one in the first 3 days takes me up on the offer, so now I rarely bother. When I do bother, I choose people who I'm sure will say no, such as children, the elderly, or the very, very well-dressed. And I beg them to go inside, tell them my job is on the line, tell them I desperately need their help. Every single one of them says no. From midnight on, I see only a few people. I stand and shiver and smoke cigarettes. Sometimes I test myself to see how long I can go without moving. I can last about 2 hours. Sometimes I sing to myself, sing silly love songs with titles like Just Once, Secret Lovers, Lost in Love, Down on Bended Knee. I don't know how or why I know the words, I just do. Sometimes I flip a quarter over and over, keep track of how many times heads, how many times tails. For some reason, there are usually more heads. Sometimes I talk to Lily, carry on long conversations with her, talk about random things, the news, something I saw while I was walking, something I read. I talk to her about our plans, the plans we made while I was in jail, where we wanted to live, the jobs we wanted to get, maybe marriage, maybe kids, what the kids would be named. She wanted a little girl, I wanted a little boy. Sometimes I cry while I talk to her. Sometimes I get angry. Sometimes I feel stupid, but I keep talking anyway. Sometimes I just stop. I have her image in my mind, and I have to stop. My shift ends at 4. I punch out, leave. It's always dark, the streets empty. I walk south into steel and concrete canyons. I move up and down vacant blocks, stare up at 50, 80, 110-story monoliths, watch streetlight shadows move across lower floors, kick deserted papers, cups, and bags lying on curbs. I walk down the middle of wide boulevards, stand on the center of iron bridges, sit alone in huge sprawling plazas, parks, long expanses of dead public grass. I am the only person awake. The city and its citizens are asleep. My footsteps, my breath, and the whistling, screaming wind are all I hear. The city is reduced, ceases to be a city, becomes a museum. Objects aren't banks, law firms, hospitals, courthouses, shopping centers, apartment buildings. They are huge, sprawling sculptures of marble, limestone, iron, steel, and glass, without purpose or use, just huge, beautiful objects. When I start to see other people, as the eyes of the city start to open, I leave, walk out to the lake, start heading north. It is always colder by the lake. The wind is always stronger. The cold shakes me and the wind stings my face. I walk until I find a bench and I sit. The bench is always cold. I stare across the frozen expanse of ice and encased debris, sticks, logs, cans. There's a football opposite a beach, a life jacket opposite a marina.
I watch as the thin girders of blue light start glowing, as the light turns yellow, pink, orange, as it spreads across the horizon. The sun appears, slowly rising, an edge, quarter, half circle. It becomes full and red, envelops the sky, dominates it. It makes the monuments of this city, of any city, every city, seem small and insignificant. It makes me feel small and insignificant. Makes me forget the past, dismiss the future. Makes my problems disappear. Feel like nothing, nothing, nothing. When I hear cars on the highway behind me, I stand, walk home. As the normal day begins, my day ends. I lie down in my apartment. Sometimes I sleep. Sometimes not. I lie there. Alone. It is 8 a.m. As I walk toward my building, I see a white Mercedes sitting at the curb. I enter the building. The door to my apartment is open. I step inside, see Leonard and Snapper standing in front of my refrigerator. The refrigerator door is open, and there are brown paper bags on the floor. Leonard. They turn around.
My son. My son.
Leonard steps toward me.
How are you?
He hugs me. I'm okay. What are you doing here?
Filling your fridge.
You came here to fill my fridge?
No, but when we arrived, we saw it was empty.
You gotta stop breaking in, Leonard.
Get a better lock and we'll stop breaking in. The lock you got is a fucking joke.
Snapper speaks. I'm the one who actually does it, kid, and it's real easy. You're lucky you ain't been robbed. Leonard laughs.
Look at this place. Who would rob him? He's got nothing to steal.
I step toward the refrigerator. What are you putting in there?
Snapper speaks. We got shit from all five food groups.
Leonard speaks.
Fruits, vegetables, proteins, grains, and dairies.
Snapper speaks.
We got them all.
I laugh. It's dairy, not dairies.
I know, but it's funnier saying dairies. Say it.
Dairies. I laugh.
Told ya. Dairies is funnier.
I laugh again. Thank you. For all five food groups.
And that's not all.
Leonard opens the cabinets. They're filled with cans of soup, boxes of rice and boxes of pasta, jars of tomato sauce. Snapper speaks.
I got something special for you in there.
He steps over, pulls down a box.
Rice-a-roni, the motherfucking San Francisco treat.
I laugh. Thanks.
Leonard speaks. You're still too skinny, my son. If you're gonna be a doorman at a bar, you're gonna need to gain some weight. We drove by last night and saw you standing out there, and you do not look particularly menacing.
You drove by to see me?
We did.
Why?
That's why we're here.
To talk to me about my job?
Yup.
What about my job?
Let's go down to the hotel. Get some breakfast. We'll talk down there.
I need some sleep.
Then get some sleep. Come down for lunch.
What time?
1?
Okay. Leonard turns to Snapper.
You finished?
Yeah.
Let's go. He needs some sleep.
Okay.
Leonard turns to me.
See you at 1.
Snapper speaks.
See ya, kid.
I speak. Thanks for the food.
Leonard speaks. Eat some of it. Right now. Get fat.
Snapper speaks.
Yeah, get fat.
I laugh. Bye. They walk out. I lie down, sleep, wake up, take a shower. I am confident now. I take the L train downtown, walk to the hotel from the train. I ride up the elevator, walk through the lobby. Leonard is waiting for me in the restaurant. I sit down with him. Where's Snapper?
He's out working. You sleep well?
I never sleep well.
You will.
I guess.
You hungry?
Yeah. Leonard motions for the waitress, orders steaks and french fries for each of us, turns back to me.
Now tell me, how the fuck you end up working at a bar?
I laugh.
Tell me how you know I work at a bar, and I'll tell you how I ended up there.
I had someone looking out for you. They told me.
Who?
Doesn't matter.
You got some flunky following me around?
I'm just looking out for you.
I can look out for myself.
Why are you working at a bar?
It was the only job I could get.
Come on, you're a smart kid. You can do better than that.
I applied for a few different jobs. Nobody wanted to hire me. I don't exactly have a sparkling resume.
It's unacceptable.
It's fine, Leonard.
You're an alcoholic and you're a drug addict. You've only been clean a couple of months. You can't work at a bar. It's crazy and stupid and dangerous.
I actually work in front of the bar. I stand there and pick my ass for hours on end. It might be stupid and it might be boring, but it's not crazy or dangerous.
Until you feel like you want a drink and you go inside.
I feel like I want a drink all the fucking time. And if I decide I want one, it won't be hard to get one, regardless of where I am.
It's unacceptable, my son.
You got a better idea?
I do.
What's that?
Come work for me.
I laugh. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Why not?
Because I've got a record, because I'm trying to stay out of trouble, because an arrest of any kind means I go away for 3 to 5.
I got good lawyers. You won't go anywhere.
I laugh. That makes me feel better.
It should. You'll have the power of an entire organization behind you.
I laugh again. That's what I'm afraid of, Leonard.
I won't let you work at a bar.
It's not a matter of what you will or will not let me do.
I'll say it differently. I can offer you a much better opportunity than you have at the bar.
Gonna make me an offer I can't refuse? Leonard laughs.
I can offer you a much better opportunity.
What would I do?
Pick things up and take them places.
I laugh again. Pick things up and take them places?
Yes, indeed.
I wouldn't want to know what I might be picking up.
That would probably be best.
Our steaks come. We start eating. We do not talk about my new opportunity. We talk about basketball. We talk about the upcoming baseball season. We talk about the cold. He hates it. We talk about our steaks. They're good. We talk about our fries. They're hot and crispy. When we're finished, we order coffee and ice cream sundaes. He gets hot fudge. I get caramel. I finish my sundae, light a cigarette, speak. Will I do anything legal?
Depends on your definition of legal.
How about according to your definition?
There are very few things illegal according to my definitions.
If I get caught, I'll be in big fucking trouble.
You won't get caught. And if you do, I'll take care of you.
I think. Take a drag. Take another.
My son.
I look up.
If you don't say yes, I'll buy the bar and fire you.
I laugh. I'm nervous, Leonard. I'm trying to live a better life. Trying to be a better person. I do not want to get locked up again.
I understand. And think that working for me will only help. You won't have any financial pressure. You won't have a boss screaming at you. You'll have as much time as you need to figure out your shit.
How long are you in town?
As long as it takes for you to say yes.
What are you going to do tonight?
I thought we'd take you to a firing range. Make sure you're handy with a weapon.
You better be fucking kidding. He laughs.
We're going out. Going to a basketball game, then have dinner. I'm going to introduce you to some people that you should know.
Sounds cool.
What are you going to do for the rest of the day?
I don't know. Go walk around.
You should give notice at that bar.
I'll think about it.
No thinking, my son. Just do.
What are you going to do for the rest of the day?
Snapper's picking me up. We have to run some errands.
Errands? He chuckles, nods.
Yes, errands.
What time should I meet you?
7.
Cool. I stand. Thanks for lunch.
Get fat.
I laugh. See you at 7. I leave. Down the elevator and outside. It's cold and gray. Always cold and gray. I start walking. Think about where I want to go. I have no idea. The temperature is below 0. I'm going to need to make stops every 10 minutes or so.
It's too cold, too cold. I stop in a clothing store. They sell suits for thousands of dollars. A man in a security uniform follows me up and down the aisles. I stop in a coffee shop. I don't order anything, just sit at a table in the corner and breathe. I walk into the lobby of a famous building built by a chewing gum company. The floor is marble, the walls are marble, the ceiling is marble. The walls and ceiling have been carved, covered with flowers, intricate patterns, saints, gods, little snarling gargoyles, big snarling gargoyles. I walk into a fast food restaurant, a comic book store, a jeweler. I get followed by another guard. I keep walking, walk into an office building, quickly walk out, walk into an art museum, take off my coat. The museum is offering free admission, as it does one day a week. I start wandering through the galleries. I stand beneath angels and saints, beneath the Son of God, beneath his mother, beneath beheaded martyrs, sobbing virgins, angry popes, beneath marching armies, generals astride their mounts, looted, burning, ravaged cities. I stare at dead game, fruits and vegetables in a market, Dutch fishing boats, merrymakers in an inn, Rinaldo being enchanted by Armida. I stare at Cupid firing arrows at the Crystal Palace, at the Seine, at Bennecourt. I watch a woman at a piano. She does not move, just stares at the keys making music I can't hear. I meet Henri Degas and his niece Lucie Degas. I walk through Paris, rainy day. Wait for the arrival of the Normandy train at the Gare Saint-Lazare. I confront the portrait of man. He stares at me. I stare back, waiting for answers. I get none. I spend hours slowly moving from room to room. I try to get as close to the paintings as possible. I close one eye and look at the individual strokes made by the painters. I close both eyes and try to smell the oil. I stand as far away as I can, walk forward, the image becoming gradually closer. I want to rub my hands along the surface, but don't want to set off an alarm or get arrested. Sometimes I talk to the paintings, to the figures in the paintings. I ask a farmer, how's the weather? I ask a singer, what's the song? I ask a baby, what's